Welcome back. This is episode 4, Cinema with the Guys, Sopranos Season 1, man. If you are listening on the Barber's Chair Network Patreon, man, we hope you're enjoying your listen as you listen to the Sopranos get broken down by two Negroes from the south side of Chicago, the only way we know how to do it. If you are not a Patreon subscriber, welcome to week 4 of your adventure with us. Today, we'll be breaking down episodes 7 and 8 of this season. And I will pass it off to my co-host, my brother, who will be giving us the synopsis.
So basically, can you hear me well, sir?
Yes, I can.
I am the guy. I'm the... Oh, remember on... what's the... is it Around the Horn?
On yeah, you're Tony Reale.
I'm Tony Reale right now. You know, I'm the nigga with the freaking... The true stats. And so right now, for this being our fourth episode of Cinema with the Guys, we are going to break down episodes 7 and 8 of the Sopranos first season. Episode 7 is called Down Neck, and this is, it's an okay episode. The next episode is called The Legend of Tennessee Moltisanti, which of course goes a little bit more into, obviously, the person it's about, Chris Moltisanti. But Down Neck is episode 7. So let's get right into it. I think this is the episode that realized I'm going to hate Anthony Jr., AJ Soprano. I think this is what made me realize I'm going to hate him. The first scene starts off with them sitting inside the gym. Him and his friend, whose name I cannot remember for the life of me, had just finished getting drunk. And they're doing like, it reminded me of Hope. Remember Hope, Lutheran?
Yeah, I remember Hope. What about Hope, though, man?
It reminded me of the gym in Hope.
That dusty-ass gym, boy.
Oh, God. Dusty ain't even a word. The little freaking...
It looked like workout. The stairs to get up there in the little locker rooms we had looked like fucking prison.
Yeah. The fits we had to wear to do that, and it was just terrible.
You know what I did? This is a side note. You know I never realized about the year we were there? Year or 2 years we were there? And that shit was right off 63rd Street.
I was.
it did dawn on me too recently.
Low key. Huh, interesting. But the next scene in Sopranos really starts with him and one of his construction bids where Chris is working as like a safety inspector because it's up to them to show face that they're actually involved. And it's also, this is to put pressure on these other businesses who refuse to, I don't want to say bow down, but essentially it is that. And so they're going up into the site manager, and they're basically making it as hard as they can for this one person because I believe the site manager owes them money, if I'm correct. And then once he gets the money, they'll leave him alone. But right now, Chris is coming through as a safety manager and just making his life a living hell, which shows what's the bread and butter of their business in the mafia. And the mafia doesn't earn money as well as they did back in the 90s. Now, bear in mind, Tony Soprano's living in a nice house.
Right.
But there's a point in time where Junior needed to scrunch up $400,000 or had to give up $400,000 for either it was his court case. This is later in season 2, I believe. His court case or something else. And he was like, ugh. Bear in mind, this was the mafia back in the 40s and the 50s. A boss would be able to get that money. I want to say relatively easy, because the mob was a $1 billion enterprise at the time, and here in the 90s, which is where the Sopranos take place, 400,000 is a lot more than they were able to. So, I'm actually very curious. I'm looking up right now, and yeah, I was correct. The mob was making about $90 billion a year.
That's a lot of fucking money.
And bear in mind, they're still making around $50 billion now. So it's not like they're not making money, but if you can see their earnings have decreased. And nigga, a $50 billion decrease is a lot of money to decrease in the mob because you didn't have to spread that around. But the mob back in the day was making just crazy amounts of money and had crazy amounts of power. So what they would need, how they would have to pay, was a lot different. But what you see now in Tony Soprano and his crew, because remember, Junior is the boss currently of the DeMeo crime family. But in reality, the street boss, the true boss, is Tony. And Tony is having to make sure that the people who owe him money take care of his money. if you were expecting, like, back in The Godfather, and when you're watching The Godfather, you would never see Vito come down to a construction site, or even freaking, who are the capos? Who are Vito's capos? The fat man and the freaking, who are Vito Corleone's capos? Come on, Scott. You saw Godfather.
Yeah, I don't remember as much as you do, nigga.
You're a coward.
You're the Godfather aficionado on here.
Vito Corleone's capos. Al Neri wasn't really a capo. Well, Al Neri was a capo for Mike. I'm sorry. Excuse me, Godfather heads. But Salazzo was the nigga who was the freaking the drug man. Oh my goodness. Who the hell were his capos? I am not going to continue until I figure out.
I'm going to play the Jeopardy music.
Hold on. I'm almost figured it out. Peter Clemenza. Oh, my God. Goodness gracious. Ugh, that took way too much time. So it was basically the ball, Copperzine Peter Clemenza. That is correct. And then Tessio, Clemenza and Tessio. But you never saw Tessio and Clemenza get involved in too much during their era. And so, but this is the time where Tony is a cop of regime, and you got to be a little bit more hands-on because you had to earn a little bit more. So if you move on to the rest of the series, now AJ, once again, he's on the path for you to completely hate him as a character. Got suspended for 3 days for drinking. I believe he was drinking the communion wine because remember he attends a Catholic church. And so now he's fin to get reviewed by the school psychologist who thinks he may be on the autism spectrum. And
yes.
You're telling me my kid's retarded? Yeah. Please forgive me for using the word. But this
for
is
the,
exactly
for the non-politically correct term in 2021.
Oh, you just don't want to be disrespectful.
That's what I mean.
Differently abled community. But this is exactly what they said. And for those who watch The Sopranos, you will have to realize the show is dated.
Yes, so, this is 1999-2000. It's 21 years ago.
And so...
Actually, 22 years ago, because it's going to be 2021 in a month and a half.
Yeah. So there's even the part where Meadow is like seen with a black guy from her college in season 2, 3? Can't remember. And he was
that was like season 3. And the funny thing, that nigga wasn't even... He was like a Drake-looking nigga. I'm talking about Drake from Degrassi-looking nigga.
He was literally Jewish and black, and he was like, so you understand, you're a Moulian. He's like, what? He's like, listen, I got black friends who don't want me dating their daughters, don't want my sons dating their daughters, and I don't want their sons dating my daughters. He's like, fuck you, man. But you'll see the racism, but it comes out. But after they're done at the school and the psychologist informs them that he thinks AJ is on the spectrum, Tony and Junior and his mother meet up, and Tony Junior's mother, of course, Meadow and AJ and Carmella are meeting up and discussing. They just have a nice family dinner. Of course, yeah. There's still tension there because Tony's mother is a terrible person. And Tony's mother is talking about when, you know, Tony used to boost cars when he was little. And I think this is a really important connection because it shows how Tony feels about his mental disability. What I mean by disability is the anxiety and depression that he feels.
This is true. Yeah. This is true. I want to review Barbershop on this too, just on some funny shit. But yeah, I agree with all that, man. I think what you're seeing is in this first season, I kind of want to say it's like a timepiece, but it kind of is. It sets you, lets you really know what year it is. And that's kind of what I like about shows that are like in different eras, because you kind of remember that time. Like even though when you see the rooms with Meadows in her bedroom, or AJ's in his bedroom doing homework or whatever, you got that little box TV, and they got the posters on the wall. That reminds me, we had the box TV in the crib, and I had nothing but Slam Magazine, Source Magazine, XXL pictures all over my fucking wall, and niggas was wearing wrestling shirts and shit like that. So it takes you back to a fucking time, which I really liked, and you can tell from the very, I think the racism in Sopranos is something we don't talk about enough.
Yeah, I will say,
and it's spread racism. It's not just one race they target.
No, Jewish people are viewed as I'm not gonna say the anti-Semitic phrase that's safe for Jewish people, but I mean, if it's two groups they get on, is the LGBTQ community, LGBTQIA plus community and black folks. I mean, they anyone who appears to be gay, they immediately are calling them the most disrespectful things. I think Richie Aprile's son is a ballet dancer, you know, which of course would be stereotypical to assume he's gay. But I mean, Tony, look at this dude and call him whatever terrible name they have for him. And the racism of black folk, which is hilarious because the Italian mob always used black associates to get their work done. But, you know, the Mulan, the smokes. I think episode 7 shows just another side of how Tony is terrible. I think I said in the last episode that episode 6 and 5 is where I started to hate Tony as a character. But now you realize you're going to pretty much hate almost every Soprano as a character. I hated all of them. It was not, maybe Meadow. I liked Meadow. Meadow didn't really do anything. Meadow was just...
Meadow was cool. Meadow. She regular teenager.
Yeah, regular teenager, regular college student. And she was just trying to live her life without it being under the scourge and the terror of her father. AJ was a dick. Carmella was not innocent because she cheated.
She did not cheat, man. This is going to go into a... this is why you got to come on Summer Session this week, because we're going to talk about what exactly is cheating, because I don't think what Carmella did was cheating. But anyway, continue with your rant.
And then, of course, the mentally challenged people. Tony feels that his mental disability, you know, this... And I wonder unlicensed, when I used to watch the Hodge Twins before they became the MAGA Twins.
They gotta find a new shtick.
Yeah, dog, it hurt me so much to see them become that. I mean, I'd rather you could be conservative. I don't care, but don't turn into just what you're turning into. But they used to say when they used to give like advice to people with girlfriends, and I remember this advice is professional. But it's unlicensed. And I used to just freaking crack up laughing. But so in my unlicensed professional advice, Tony probably has a panic disorder. And he considers this panic disorder to be a character defect.
Yeah.
You know? And now he sees the fact that Chris is experiencing, which may be autism, the autism spectrum.
You mean AJ, nigga?
I'm sorry. What did I say?
You called a nigga Chris.
I'm sorry, AJ might be...
I have a counterpoint for that when you continue. Not a counterpoint, but something to add on.
Maybe experiencing the autism spectrum. AJ might be experiencing the autism spectrum. He's terrified. And he because I think it reflects on him, and this is why this is a brilliant show, it reflects on him feeling like he is a failure because he has to deal with anxiety, which is it's so common amongst human beings.
Yeah.
Americans, non-Americans and everything. So it's very, very common. And well, what you do see in this episode, which is the first time I think you do see Johnny Boy, is his dad, is Johnny, which is the Johnny Boy Soprano, which is the father of Tony Soprano. And you see how Tony and his father have a contentious relationship because Tony Soprano ain't really a helpful father, you know? You'll see that he has love for Janice, but he just kind of treats Tony like he's a nobody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And one of the things that really startles Tony's life is when he misses the bus for school and he ends up seeing his father, Johnny Soprano, and Junior Soprano. Junior Soprano is the one driving the car, and Tony gets out the car and they're chasing down a dude who owes them money. And so they're outside of like this electrical supply store and they're beating up the guy who owes them money. Junior's there with him. Of course, Junior, I believe, was playing catch with him beforehand. But this is when Tony is really introduced. He's similar. Listen, this is what AJ is going through. But AJ is a little more protected than Tony was because, of course, the mob at that time had a little bit more power. The mob at that time would beat niggas up on the street and expect nothing.
Yeah, it wouldn't be no issues.
Tony is introduced as a child to the brutality of the mob, and so is AJ right now. And so Tony is reflecting that as he's laying down, as he's sitting up inside the bathroom. Just wondering everything, you know, basically how his son is going through what he's going through. And I want to say Carmella looked fine in this episode.
We got to stop the Carmella love on this podcast. It's getting ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous.
I don't think so. But yeah. And of course, the main concern is Tony is talking to Dr. Melfi about, does AJ know? Does AJ know what he's going, you know, who he is, the person that he does? And did his father ever talk to him about that? And it seemed like Tony is even in disarray himself. One of the hilarious scenes is when outside of Bada Bing and they're like, these strippers with the stiffest breasts on earth made of pure concrete.
Bro, those like the worst implants ever. Or as Chris Jericho calls them, enhancements. Them joints did not move.
This terrible. Shout out to Science Advancing. Because they have put off some miracles recently. But Tony is back sitting with his I think it's either Paulie and Silvio or Big Pussy and Silvio, and they're just discussing everything. And Chris, wait,
before you go too far, I just want to get my point on AJ.
For sure.
I think the thing that Tony's most scared of is he doesn't want AJ to end up like him. The way I think that's his biggest fear. And I don't feel like, I think he wants AJ to be the opposite of him, which I feel sometimes maybe a lot of fathers feel that way. Yeah, you don't want your sons to be like you if you're not proud of yourself. Like, he's going through a lot of mental trauma that he had growing up. And you see from the stories that you see with his mother. And even that little flashback scene they did, you know what I'm saying, with that. Was this the episode where they did this was the episode where they got busted, wasn't it?
Who, Chris? Who, AJ?
No, the flashback to when his daddy and Uncle June got busted. Well, that was a later episode.
That is a good question. Hold on, I have to think. I think this is...
Because they did two flashbacks.
Yeah, I think episode 8 is when they get busted.
Okay.
No. This is when they get busted because they went to that carnival.
Okay, yeah. Oh, so this is the comparison I made then. So you can see from his stories with Dr. Melfi about his relationship with his mother. And you see in this particular flashback, you know, him being hyped to spend time with his father. And to see his father going off with Janice, who you get introduced later in the show, he kind of felt like there was no love for him. And you see him going back and following the car. Getting, I think he hopped in the trunk or something to see where they were going. And you just see all the mental trauma. And I don't think he wants that life for AJ. And I think he's trying to be a better father to AJ, but he doesn't know how to be a better father for AJ. Because every time he see the punk ass come out of him, he loses his fucking shit. So to see him maybe even possibly being autistic for a problematic nigga like Tony Soprano, it scars him a little bit.
Yeah. It 100% scars him because of the fact that it's reflective of himself, as you said. No, this is a very good point. So AJ has underwent tests, and I don't think there was an actual definitive claim of it, but it's like Tony is now trying to teach him to be a man. He's showing him how to change a tire. And it's almost as if he doesn't want him to be like himself, but at the same time, he doesn't want him to be a schmuck, as as they say in Italian mafia films. And he goes back to Dr. Melfi's office to just talk about everything. And this is when Junior is playing. He talks about Junior to Dr. Melfi. And Junior, he truly loves Uncle Junior. He truly does all that. Their relationship does change as the story goes on.
It does, yeah.
But Uncle Junior was more of a father to him than his actual father.
But even as it changed, I still feel like even though he I don't want to say the emotion later, he still loved Uncle Jim.
Yeah, even though he's about to, Peter, you watch Sopranos.
Yeah, if you've seen the fucking show, you know he hates the nigga, okay?
You remember he's about to pop Uncle Junior the nursing home, and then Uncle Junior's has like dementia, Alzheimer's. And he was like, I have a nephew. He was like, you don't know, do you? And then he just walks out, all that built up anger, because of course, Uncle June shoots Tony in season 4, 5, 6?
I think that's 6. It's 6.
He shoots Tony, and he wants to get revenge on him, but it doesn't end up happening. But when he's with Dr. Melfi, this is toward the middle of the show. It flashes back to the scene where Tony is like 9 years old, and he's playing baseball outside of the house. Him and Uncle June are throwing the ball back and forth, and this is why he loved Uncle June. Uncle June spent time with him. Meanwhile, what did his father do? His father was spending time with Janice.
With Jan, yeah.
Now, you don't see Janice as an adult until this point. Only thing that you see of is young Janice. And so after Chris is done, after Tony is playing with Uncle June, Johnny Boy comes outside and is saying, you know, hey, Pops, can I come with you? And Johnny says, no, you know, I need you to help your mother with something in the house. And Johnny Boy then takes Janice.
Johnny Boy is a hilarious thing, by the way. Johnny Boy. Here's Johnny.
It makes me, I'm going to say rest in peace of Johnny Boy from Curie. I don't know if you don't even remember Johnny. He was a year under you. He rapped. He was gunned down like in 2010.
Speaking of RIP, RIP Alex Trebek.
Oh, man.
The legend. You remember multiple times watching Jeopardy with Grandma. And not only with Grandma, but when we didn't have any cable, when we was living in West Englewood. That was one of our shows.
Yeah. But rest in peace of Johnny Boy. I didn't know him until I had got in school suspension. Like my junior year, and he was good people's, and rest in peace to Alex Trebek. This is also when you start to see how Tony's relationship with his mother was. Livia was terrible to Tony when he was a kid, you know, just awful. Livia was doing just terrible things, and Tony had to find a way to survive. And so Tony, being a little kid, wants to find out why in the world his father, also that's right, Livia raised either a knife or forked to Tony and act like she wanted to kill Tony.
Yeah.
Also, you see issues of racial riots very briefly. And so when they're going to Springfield Avenue, take a bat with you, racial riots that were unfolding in Jersey. Tony said that he was going to go out and hang out, and his mother told him, I take a bat with you. But in reality, Tony was going to hide inside of his father's Cadillac. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful baby blue Cadillac. One of my highlights of the show is I really wish I had that car in actual life. But Tony takes like string or something. I'm not sure how he lockpicked that with string, but that's another story. He takes the string so he can hold down the trunk of the car. And then Janice and Dad are heading to the carnival, and it was called Rideland. And in Tony's opinion, all you saw was that Johnny Boy is taking care of Janice and not taking care of himself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you see Uncle June, and the actors who played Uncle June looks like Junior for real. You see Uncle June, and you see Tony Soprano get arrested. But what you also see is that the mob men use that area. They use that area to talk about illicit activities. And then you will see racial things. Like, why don't you go after the Mulions? They're the one tearing down New Jersey. So remember, if you watch Sopranos, if you watch any mafia film, there will be racism. And I can't explain it to you. It's so weird how I love mafia films, but I also have to get through the fact that there is unadulterated racism in all these shows. So they arrest all of the mafia men who are there and sit inside the carnival. And Tony did not understand until he got older why he was there. But he then found out that, of course, the only reason he took Janice there was not because necessarily that he did not love Janice, but he took him there because he took her there because it wanted to make it seem like he was having father-daughter time.
Right.
But in reality, they were
just going to take care of some business.
Exactly. When in reality, they were just talking business. And this is, I guess some people may call this episode slow, but
it was kind of slow. I won't say it was slow, but it didn't have the action that you wanted.
And then as Tony gets older, he sees how his mother is basically a hindrance to not only him, but he was also a hindrance to his father. And the episode ends with him talking to his mother. She's a nursing home. Then they go back and find out that AJ actually is not on the autistic spectrum. He's not on the autistic spectrum at all. And so in Tony's eyes, all right, that's good enough for me. I'm out. And he wants to hear no further. And I think this is one of the few times the episode ends after he's on the elliptical. The funny thing is, when I first saw this, I was like, nigga, there was an elliptical in 1989?
Yeah, and of course, nigga.
I had no clue, dude.
Did you think it was 1945, nigga?
Remember, I didn't lose weight. Of course, you know, I was a footballer, Curie, but nigga, we didn't have no treadmills, nigga. All we did was lift weights and eat. But when I started working out in 2015, and I saw the elliptical, I saw it for the first time, and that was a year later. I saw the Sopranos. I'm like, nigga, that was an elliptical in 1999. But
technical shit you missed from the early 90s and the 2000s? Is there anything you missed from the early 90s and 2000s? Because when I was watching it the other day, I was like, man, we grew up in the best era. Being a kid in the 90s and being a teenager in the 2000s. You know, 2010s was my first adult decade. So the 2000s, I was a teenager. Early in the 90s, I was a kid. What's some of the, if we can, we're going to use this topic of The Sopranos. What's some things from the 99, 2000, 2002 type era that you miss, if anything?
Nothing.
I miss not having to be, I miss the naiveness of being in my little world. The only thing that mattered was school and who the Rock and Stone Cold was going to defend their title against.
That, I do miss the naivete of not having to focus so much on life. But, I mean, anybody can say that about any decade.
This so is
nothing
true.
Nothing specific.
But I miss the music.
Yeah. But episode seven ends with Tony. One of the few times he would be an actual father to AJ. I just want you to know that. And you can tell in the last scene where him and AJ are having a Sunday that he truly loves AJ. But he also doesn't really know what to do, you know? But they end up having a freaking Sunday, you know, get the sprinkles, get the fudge. And then they have, like, they're playing around and playing and, like, throwing, like, freaking whatchamacallit. What is that called? Whipped cream on each other. It's cool to see. And that's one of the few times that you will see Tony being a father. I mean,
one of the very few times that you see him being a father.
Yeah. So moving on now to the next episode is The Legend of Tennessee Moltisanti. And this is focusing on... Wait. We didn't give a grade for episode seven.
Six out of ten. It's definitely one of the episodes where if you're watching it the second time, you spend majority of the watching in your phone.
Of course, I'm not... With me, when I watch TV, it's impossible for me to watch on my phone. I have to be, like, locked in.
I'm not talking about watching the thing on your phone. I'm talking about, like, I'm doing some other shit.
Oh, yeah. Even still, the only thing I did was American Dad because I've seen every episode. But I'd give it a 7 out of a 10. It was... The pace was odd because if you split in between 6 and 8, the pacing was a little bit odd to fit in there. With that being said, it was still a fantastic episode. But the next episode is The Legend of Tennessee Moltisanti. We're on episode 8, and you get to find out what Chris is. Once again, another dream sequence. Chris is Chris is worried or thinking about, sorry, let me move my seat around. Chris is thinking about the person that he whacked, which was the Polish or the Chechen dude. Forgive me 100%. I'm not reading off of
episode is Czech.
He's Chechen. Okay. I'm going to actually bring up the synopsis so I can remember names. Because I don't remember names that well. And you are right. He was freaking Chechen. The episode really starts off after you see Chris going through his dream or fantasy sequence about the person he murdered and feeling a bit of regret of fear. You move on to Larry Boy Barisi, who is a copper regime, which I think, I don't know how big the freaking whatchamacallit is, but he has one of the biggest biggest crews within the Soprano family. They are at his
daughter's wedding.
Yeah. And this is funny because it reminds you someone who is an alumni of Martin Scorsese and also in The Sopranos. It reminds you of the wedding between Henry Hill and Soprano. And I forgot LaBraine Bracco's character, but his wife. You're introduced to this Italian wedding. And I mean, everybody drops off like a couple thousand to you at a wedding. This is what I want. I want an Italian wedding just so I can get the cash. Why don't I know anybody in the mob? I'm like, bro, I need an Italian wedding. And they just drop off straight cash because Henry and his wife in Goodfellas, I say that, Martin Scorsese, they're dropping off cash. You know, so they're sitting there, they're getting cash. And Larry Boy is someone who Tony seems to trust. And they are finding out, all of the capos are there. They are finding out that they are about to be hit with some federal IDs, indictments, INDs, my brothers. And, he was like, yeah, you know, I got a friend who works at the FBI. He's got a Gumar. I'm not sure if a Gumar.
A Gumar is a side chick.
It's So he's got a guma that works at the FBI headquarters, and indictments are coming down. And so Tony, Big Pussy, and Larry Breezy, Larry Boy, are finding out that, yeah, they're going to have some indictments. But you also get to find out, you will also, you won't know, but there is a rat amongst them. Now, do you remember who the rat was?
Yeah, I remember. It was the other dude. I can't remember his name. We're not good with names on this show, people.
Is it Jimmy?
It's Jimmy, I think. Yeah, it was Jimmy. They thought it was Pussy.
They thought it was, let me see. Let me double check. I think it was Jimmy. I want to see his face. It was, nope, it wasn't Jimmy. Jimmy is not the person. Damn it. Who is the freaking dude? I can't remember the freaking whatchamacallit. It wasn't Jimmy Altieri. I'm not 100% sure who was the snitch. They thought it was Big Pussy at the time. Wait, is it him? No, it's Jimmy Altieri.
The episode where the cop insinuates his pussy.
Yes.
And yeah. So we'll keep going. I don't want to fuck up the flow.
Yeah, Jimmy Altieri is the snitch. You won't find out though, but some of the things that they say. You know, I guess if you pay attention, and which is once again why I love The Sopranos, if you pay attention, you will see how every other copper regime seems to be incredibly worried about the indictments. Uncle June is there. I mean, it's all hands on deck.
You got the whole squad there.
Yeah, I mean, Mikey Palmites, which I hate. All of the coppers are there, and they're talking about these indictments, and they're starting to be really worried because, remember, this is RICO Act territory. And this is not like the 50s. You get the RICO Act, they're taking down everybody, even if you weren't directly involved. And so while they're at that wedding, it ends with them. They're heading home. Sonny Soprano heads home, and they got to start moving money. They got to have these freaking setup funds so they can find a way to lay low, so they won't get hit with, okay, you stole some jewelry, or you stole, I mean, he pulls like a freaking 12-gauge shotgun from out of his ceiling. And meanwhile, Chris Moltisanti, which is of course the episode is named after him, Tennessee Moltisanti, he's working on a script because he wants to get into Hollywood. You know what's interesting, because the story of him being in Hollywood, I kind of felt it was unnecessary.
I kind of feel like, just in general, man, you see like what his other interests are. Instead of, yeah. I feel like he was having an internal struggle with, I want to get out. He wants to be a part of the family and prove his loyalty to Tony. But at the same time, he feels like, this is a talent I have, and this could be my way out to a life that's better without having to look over my back every other fucking time. And that's something you're going to see over these next couple episodes, and even the next season, that Chris kind of battles.
Tony La Russa was just arrested.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was retweeting.
He wasn't just arrested again?
He wasn't just arrested. He was arrested the day before they hired him.
I'm sorry, people. I randomly got a freaking text that Tony La Russa got arrested. I'm like, nigga, what? Oh, my God. Second DUI. Anyway, I hate this team. But, yeah, so you move on to the next scene, and you get to find out Melfi. And it was weird because one of Melfi's father looked like freaking Hesh. And I was like, she's Hesh daughter? But it's just the hack that happened to look. Very, very similar. But Melfi is she's Italian, and she's sitting with her father, her son, her mother, and her ex-husband. And they're just talking about how, you know, someone like Tony Soprano brings the value of the community down and brings down the value of the city. And then you find out that Dr. Melfi sort of ingratiates herself with that mob lifestyle. She sort of defends Tony Soprano unwillingly. And this is a key thing, because you really start to find out how Dr. Melfi has been negatively affected by treating Tony Soprano. Fast forward, because once again, Chris is the person who focuses on this, who is the focus of this show. You see Chris is trying to get some pastries for the guys back at the, I don't know if they were back at Bada Bing or one other place, but Chris is at this pastry shop. And as the person who plays the worker in the pastry shop, he plays Roman on Chicago PD, and he was also in The Hurt Locker. He is like Corporal, I forgot his name. But Chris goes off the handle, tells him, okay, I need these pastries. The dude acts up and says, I'm not going to give it to you, F you, man. So Chris pulls a classic mob move, close the door, then closes the door and then turns the sign from "we're open" to "we're closed," tells him, "I'm gonna need everything. I'm gonna need the box of pastries I came for." Because basically this man made, he said, "Do I like a pussy to you?" Made him look like a chump. Chris pulls a classic mafia move. I'm trying to remember what specifically he wanted. He wanted a pastry box. But do you remember Italian? I'm not good with Italian pastries. I don't know for sure. But he asked him to, the Schwoyadel, the Napoleons, and the cannolis. And he gets all this out. He ends up shooting the dude in the leg. And then Chris goes back to Sylvie, Pussy, and all of them. And, you know, they talk about all this stuff. And I think you really start to find out that I think to myself, I'm not sure Chris's heart was ever actually in it. You know what I mean?
No, I won't say that. I feel like it was a tug. A tug. Like, I feel like he wanted to go fully into it, but he knew that he'd be honestly betraying Tony and them by putting stuff that they went through on film. And I think that was the thing that held him back the most.
But I still, when I say it wasn't in it, I don't ever think he was as fully committed to La Cosa Nostra as Tony was, simply because Chris was talented and had other avenues.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Whereas Tony was basically forced into the mob by proxy, due to his father's upbringing of him. So meanwhile, in the episode, if you fast forward, Carmella is trying to get Livia out of the retirement community. So Tony is starting to hide money. He's starting to hide guns in the fear that an indictment will come down. And he ends up telling Dr. Melfi that, we might be ending up with some serious repercussions. And I might need to go away for a long time. And Chris is talking about, and once again, it's also focused on Chris and the person he is. Chris wants to, he has so many things he wants to do in life. And this is why, in the end, when Chris gets whacked by freaking Tony in season 6, season 5?
It was the last season, I think. It was season 8.
You mean season 6, nigga?
No, season...
It's six seasons. Remember,
technically seven.
Because it's broke down. But Tony waxed Chris by like freaking suffocating him. But anyway, Chris is starting to have worries. He's starting to have dreams about the body, person that he killed. And so he ends up digging up the body and I think disposing of it just so he can rid himself of these fears that he's going through. So this whole arc really focuses on Chris and his development into the lifestyle. But right now, he won't get too deeply involved. He'll still be day-to-day with the mob, of course, because Tony is his uncle. But now he has so many different things he wants to pursue. He even tells Tony about, these things in life that he wants to do, being in the films. And Tony, of course, is looking at him like, you're crazy. But Tony is like a father figure to him. But that really is what's happening with... Tony, and as the indictments come out in the FBI, and Agent Harris, I believe his name, you'll start to know Agent Harris a lot more. He's really integral into the whole indictment process. They come in, check the house, try to see if anything happens, and there's a funny scene is there's an Italian FBI agent, and Tony calls him something in Italian, which basically basically says he's a traitor.
I wish I could remember what that word was.
He breaks a dish of some rigotte pie and he was like, his name is Grasso, and he's like, Grasso, he's like, huh, and he does like a gesture in Italian, and basically I don't know, I would love to know what he called him, but I'm sure it's something along the line of how you prosecuting your own people, because this agent Grasso's an Italian name. But it ends with them eating Chinese food in the house, talking about the indictments and everything that they're going through, and how Tony is going to try to figure out a way out of this. In this episode, once again, you start to see Tony and Dr. Melfi's relationship is also contentious as well, because Tony is so pissed off that he starts to unleash his anger and hatred. On Dr. Melfi, because Dr. Melfi had rejected his basically impression, his advances. That's what it is. his advances to her. He feels like, oh, this is all about money. He doesn't care about it. It just shows you how selfish he is as a person. Yeah. Tony is as a person. But what sets the stage for the rest of the series is Uncle June finds out Tony is visiting a shrink.
Yes. And this is where he loses his shit.
And this is why I hate it. Hey, you're his mother. You know he's in the mob. He's like, Tony's visiting that shrink. You believe that, my Tony? Johnny was a saint. And Uncle June says,
you do a great Liv Soprano impersonation.
And Uncle June goes, what? You saying a who? And this will set the stage for the rest of the series, because being in the mafia and being a freaking shrink and having and seeing a psychologist or psychiatrist is not what you want to see. The episode ends with Chris getting a newspaper and finding out about some notoriety that he gained. Because remember, for Chris wants notoriety. That's for sure. And I'm pretty sure that's part of the reason why he wanted to get involved in the movie industry. He wanted the notoriety that comes with it. And right now they're living in a time where the mob is trying to be a little bit more quiet because all eyes are on them. And he find out about after his friend got whacked by Mikey Palmice, he was listed as an associate of the DeMille crime family. Meanwhile, Chris got no notoriety. So Chris runs into a mailbox, grabs literally every piece of not mailbox, but newspaper stands, grab every single piece of the newspaper because it features his name. And so it gives him this air of importance. And that's why I say, I don't know if his heart was ever in it, because he was in the mob business for the notoriety. Tony was in the mob business because he was kind of raised up into the mob business. You know, he was born into it. Chris was born into it, but he took on the role of being born into it a lot more than others did. But that ends season one, episode 8, The Legend of Tennessee Monster Society. I'd give the episode a 9. It was a fantastic episode. Yeah, it was a slow burner at times too, but it really goes to show how vulnerable the mob was in the 90s. And it really goes to show how a lot of the idea of Omerta, the code of silence, is dead.
Yeah.
People were out there to get it for themselves. Hence why, you know, Chris in the script, a lot of people made scripts in the mob. You can go on YouTube right now and look up former mob boss, and you will find dozens of former mob capos, soldiers, bosses who will tell their story, because the government put so much pressure on them that it's hard to continue to doing what they're doing. So I would give this one a 9. It was great.
Yeah, I'll give it a 9 as well, too. I think you're starting to see the seeds being planted for the final episodes of this season. You can start to see, you know, where family doesn't really matter too much in the grand scheme in Tony's life. Like, it's just like, it's kind of like Michael Jackson's brother. Like, the niggas only family by blood, but they really didn't fuck with each other like that. That's really what's going on with the Soprano family right now. You're starting to slowly see how this season is going to end. You've got different question marks raised. Like, what exactly is going to come from Junior knowing that Tony is going to therapy? What's the Liv situation going to happen? Is there a rat in the family? Is Big Pussy Rat? There's so many questions that are starting to get raised, and I think this is really when the show really starts to heat up. So I give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I give it a 9 out of 2. 9 out of 10 as well. We'll be back, of course, with the next episode. If you're listening, as we will say every episode, if you're listening on Patreon, episode 5 is already up. What you waiting on? Binge with us. You will have a nice little appendum to... Was it appendum is the word? I forgot the word name of it. But you have a nice little companion. There we go. As you're watching, and you can start to think about the deeper aspects of the show, the aspects of the film, of the cinematography, of the script writing that really pulled you into the show. So thank you all for watching this episode 4. Episode 5 and 6 are up if you are a Patreon member. If you're not a Patreon member, you will catch the next episode next week. So thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back with another episode.
Yes, sir.